Let's go, girls.
Welcome to the AmeriChicks with Kim Monson and Molly Vogt.
Molly is a former mutual fund consultant and retirement plan specialist who is currently the director and founder of My Purse Politics.
Kim served as a city councilwoman, is a former investment broker, and now a successful entrepreneur. Now, let's hear what's hatching in local and national politics with the AmeriChicks. Molly and Kim.
Happy Monday, everybody. I hope you are enjoying the traffic out there in Colorado. Welcome to the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim. You know, we like to look at issues that need to be on your radar right now and dissect them as right versus wrong instead of right versus left. And we're going to do that today. The top two issues on the docket today, the economy and health care. We're going to spend the entire hour on health care, so I'm just going to say one quick thing about the economy. You know, a lot of people have been sleeping on their mattresses with cash underneath them for the past eight something years because you didn't know where to put the money. The rates are so low. What are you going to do about it? And investor sentiment was really just kind of down. But the economy is looking up. And if President Trump ends up doing what he says he's going to do, then we are going to have some new opportunities. So we are going to be talking about this live and in person tomorrow night at 7 p.m. with the America's Retirement Store. We're doing an economic and investment forum. We'd invite you to join us. It's at 5445 DTC Parkway, Greenwood Village. Again, that's at 7 p.m. And if you want to RSVP, please do check it out on the AmeriChicks Facebook or Twitter. We've got the invite right there. Cool. So moving on to healthcare. There are bells ringing all over the place. We have in studio with us one of our fellow LPR graduates and radio co-hosts as well, Jimmy Singenberger. He's the host of Business for Breakfast on 1690 KDMT right here. Also, the Jimmy Singenberger Show on 710 KNUS. You're listening to him all the time. He's got a lot of really great stuff going on. But right now, we invited him to come in and talk about something he's doing with healthcare. He's a millennial. And so he's got a lot of good ideas on how we can revitalize healthcare in America and replace with ideas that are good for all ages, not just the elderly. So, Jimmy, welcome to the AmeriChicks.
Hey, it's great to be here with you ladies and to be on the program. That's sort of a shall we say, a sister show to the program, on Business for Breakfast from 5 to 8 in the morning. So it's great to be on the station with you ladies.
Yeah. Well, hey, same with us. Thanks. Thanks for all you're doing. Tell us about the event that you have coming up tomorrow.
Well, sure. The Millennial Policy Center is a program of the Liberty Day Institute, a nonprofit that I've been involved in for a number of years. It's been around for 20 plus years. It's all about focusing on civic education in various capacities. The Millennial Policy Center is a new program that was recently founded as part of Liberty Day Institute to engage and educate millennials about the issues of our day, the different problems that our nation faces from the perspective of millennials, and really how we can revitalize healthcare in America, how we can get the economy going again, get jobs created, how we can improve K through 12 education for those millennials who are starting families and have kids that are going through the education system, and how we might be able to reform higher education as well. So we tackle the small issues that, you know, the ones that aren't too very commonly discussed because they're just minor subjects. Nobody wants to talk about them. But the Millennial Policy Center is very excited that we're putting together our pilot project this week, launching what we're calling the Healthcare Revitalization Initiative, and it's all kicking off tomorrow evening with a panel discussion and forum on Obamacare and repealing and replacing Obamacare, and really presenting some arguments and positions on why we should repeal it and what a replacement should look like.
Awesome. Well, we're glad you're doing this because as we're going to talk about today here in studio, we have Dr. Joe Vecchio, and we're going to get to the three phases of the new American Healthcare Act. And so it looks like phase three is where the creative ideas come in. And it sounds like that's what y'all are talking about. So do you want to give us a couple of just ideas and teasers of some of the solutions, Jimmy, that you've come up with?
Well, I think that among the different ideas that we're developing with our policy fellows is really looking at things that could be done as well in phase one. In addition to phase three, some of those things that you would be looking at with phase three would be association health plans and being able to pull together small businesses or even church members and so forth to come together and be able to purchase a health insurance plan that works for them and for their members. That, I think, would be a very great opportunity to give a more maximizing impact for competition among individuals. Also, one of the ideas that we're really interested in and will be proposed in a policy paper that we'll be publishing this week, and that is talking about directing the tax credits, refundable tax credits that folks are talking about as being included in the American Health Care Act. And instead of putting them towards premiums specifically, we say direct them to health savings accounts for everybody who's eligible for these credits, and they would be means tested and so forth. But when a credit goes into your health savings account, you could use it to buy a health insurance plan, apply it to your premium if you'd like to, put it towards over-the-counter drugs. We would expand the contribution limit drastically to a significant margin to be able to enable people to put as much as they can or more money into their health savings account if that works for them. So it really puts the patient in charge and makes it consumer-driven in a way that we don't think that the American Health Care Act quite accomplishes.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. I love it. I love the fact that you're getting millennials involved because, as we know, what Obamacare did is it thought that we were going to have a much less expensive plan because we were going to have so many healthy young bodies on Obamacare. Mm-hmm. And clearly those people did not go that way because they couldn't really afford the new increase. A lot of them thought, I don't need it. It's cheaper for me to pay the penalty. So it reduced, you know, the amount of healthy guys we had in to choose from.
And I'm among those. I have no health insurance.
Oh, man.
I am without health insurance. I'm one of those millennials who would be required to purchase health insurance. I'm 26, so I would be off my parents' health care plan regardless. But here's the interesting thing about Obamacare is that just because your parents may be able to keep you legally on an insurance plan doesn't mean they're able to. I have a brother who's 24. He's not covered under my parents' plan because they would have to pay an $8,000 premium every year and a $12,000 deductible. My sister is about to be 20 years old. The only reason she's covered is because she goes to Colorado School of Mines and has very great insurance coverage there and a tremendous opportunity to access care there. My parents have a plan for each other, but as my dad told me just the other day, essentially, it's like he doesn't even have health insurance because it's a $620 premium a month, and they can hardly ever see the doctor.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So we've got about 30 seconds left. Tell everybody about your event tomorrow and where and who gets to go and how do they find out more info.
It's a cross-generational event called Revitalizing Healthcare in America. You can go to millennialpolicycenter.org or search Revitalizing Healthcare in America on Facebook, and you can get the details there. It's going to be from 6:30 to 8:30 with the panel discussion starting at 7. It's a cross-generational event, but bring millennials. We want to get them out there.
All right. That's Jimmy Singerberger. He's the host of Business for Breakfast and the Jimmy Singerberger Show right here on KDMT. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
Kim Munson here. Molly and I'd love the opportunity to get together with our listeners, new and old, face-to-face. On March 14th at 7 p.m., we'll be hosting a panel discussion to discuss current economic conditions and the direction of the new administration is going. Joining the panel would be Marilyn Weaver and Bruce Larson from Presidential Brokerage to give their insight on how changes in policy may affect your investment outlook. For more info, go to arstaxbook.com or look for the link on our webpage, americhicks.com. We hope to see you there. Investments offered through Presidential Brokerage.
Well, welcome back to the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, and we are sitting here with Dr. Jill Vecchio. And Jill Vecchio, many of you know, she has put together some healthcare options that work, and she is one of the few physicians in the country that had actually, she's one of the few people in America that had read the whole Obamacare bill. So, of course, we wanted to bring her in. Healthcare is on the forefront of everybody's minds right now. So, Jill, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, ladies.
Yeah. And let's just jump in here. They say there's going to be three phases to this new American Healthcare Act.
Yeah, at least three phases. So right now, really what we're talking about is part one or phase one. And this is time sensitive because the House and Senate are in the process of developing their budgets. So this part one needs to go into be included in that budget legislation that will eventually be passed. It's the Senate's job to pass a budget. And we know under Obama, the Senate never did pass a budget. But that's part of what they're supposed to do. So I think actually this will be the first time in 8 years that we will have an actual budget. So, yes, they're putting a lot of repealing a lot of the taxes from Obamacare in. They're putting a limitation on the premium tax credits from Obamacare. Those are going to continue until 2020, but then they'll stop. They will be kind of replaced by a refundable tax credit for health insurance. And that's the part that's causing a lot of hoo-ha from congressional leaders in the Freedom Caucus, especially Rand Paul has been very verbal about that, opposing that part of it. So the rest of it really isn't all that controversial about getting rid of a lot of these taxes and so forth. But the controversial part for the Republicans is this new refundable tax credit. And I think they could probably do a better job. I liked Jimmy's recommendation. But at the same time, I think if we enacted other changes, we could make healthcare so affordable and then let people save into their health savings accounts. In my opinion, let charities and churches start health savings accounts. We donate to them the same way you would donate to Save the Redwoods or, you know, an animal project or something.
And that could be used for people.
That could be used for only for medical expenses. But if people needed help with their medical expenses, they could go to a church or a charity or another individual that could give them money from their health savings account. It could only be used for medical expenses. We need to stop depending on the government for charity. It's that they don't spend that money well, certainly, or wisely. They use it to buy votes. And we should be, as human beings and members of a caring society, we should be taking care of each other, I think.
Well, I love this because, I mean, it. Let me say, maybe I shouldn't say I love this. I find this encouraging. Let me put it that way, because this starts to move the control back to the individual.
Right.
And when the individual is looking at the prices of different procedures or medication or whatever, then you start to have people, you know, kind of make sure that they know what they're spending. And I think that it'll create competition and probably bring prices down.
Right. Once you get everything out in the open and but the problem is there's nothing in this first part that does very much to decrease the actual cost of healthcare for you and I and the average person. There's really nothing in here. And then it also creates this new entitlement of these refundable tax credits. And there's no back end on that. It's not like they go on for a few years. Now, I could see maybe doing it for a couple of years and then phasing it out so that the market has a chance to make some adjustments to create more of a free market atmosphere for healthcare. So that we have, you know, some support maybe for a couple of years, but you know, that's the best I can think of it. But otherwise, I don't like the idea of the refundable tax credits. Why is the government, why are they doing this again?
Mm-hmm. So we're talking with Dr. Joe Vecchio, who is a radiologist who read the entire Obamacare bill when it came out, if you don't remember, which most congressmen and Supreme Court justices said would be cruel and unusual punishment for them to have to read it before they voted on it or decided on it. She read it. For the past several years, she's been going around and talking to people about what was in the bill, how it was going to hurt people, how much of a tax it is, how it actually wasn't even constitutional the way that it was written or passed the first time, because the purse strings are supposed to be held by the House. But this actually started in the Senate under a different bill, under a military housing bill, was scraped and then became a health care bill. So the whole thing was kind of mixed from the get-go. So you've been talking to congressmen for many years about the solution and the replacement. So that's why we're really glad that you're in here with us today. So like we said, Republicans are arguing that this current bill that we're seeing right now is only the first step in the healthcare reform. There's three phases. Phase one is the budget. Now, the CBO came out today and said that this, so far, what they've seen, this new bill is going to reduce our deficit by $337 billion.
Over 10 years.
Over 10 years. And the largest savings is going to come from reductions in outlays for Medicaid and the elimination of the subsidies. So right. Do you think that's all good? Right. The only thing is we've got to figure out without now
and that
we're
includes,
taking out the
that,
subsidies.
That does take that takes into account, apparently, and I've only read part of the CBO thing, but I did see that it takes into account the tax credits.
Okay, it does.
Right.
Good.
Yeah.
And the tax credits you said are only 10 years out?
No, there's no end.
They keep going.
Yeah, they keep going.
Okay. And does that, the tax credit, though, that does not include the health savings accounts increasing the amount that we can put away pre-tax into our own savings account?
Correct.
Okay.
That doesn't include that because it's not really a budgetary thing.
That's, okay. Yeah. And so the amount that they're increasing is about, is probably double the amount we can put in the HSAs now with this?
I'm not sure. Well, that kind of, I think that's still included in part three.
Okay. Okay. So it's, so at this point, we're still waiting to find out how much we can put in the HSA, but you,
right,
Dr. Jovek, you're
saying, still negotiable.
Let's make it,
I hope,
unlimited.
It's still, yeah, that's still negotiable. And that's one of the things that, like, for instance, Senator Rand Paul has a great health proposal. He has great ideas on health savings accounts in particular. He has some ideas that nobody else is talking about. And one of them would be that you could put an unlimited amount of money in a health savings account. And if you think about it, really over generations, if you could bequeath that to charities or foundations or your family members, think about what that could do over time for a great number of people that didn't use, you know, if they could have all this money accumulated in the health savings account, we wouldn't have the people tapping into Medicaid for nursing home care or long-term care to the same extent. You know, I think we could be a lot more self-sufficient as a society if we were allowed to save more money. I think the same thing goes for 401k and retirement accounts. Mm-hmm. Why is there a cap on that? Why can't we save as much money as we want?
Mm-hmm. Because the government wants their piece.
And they want to be able to buy votes. They want to have some control, and they want the tax revenue, although, you know, there's questions as to how much that really, how much they really need our tax revenue based on compared to what they, the money that they generate out of thin air through the Federal Reserve.
But how much, imagine how much less welfare would be needed at the end of our life if we were allowed to put our money away for retirement for ourselves.
And then if you accumulate a lot of money, you can give it away.
Right.
And it can only be used for medical expenses. There's nothing that we ever give the government that says that this money can only be used directly to help a person, mm-hmm. you know, because it ends up half of it spent on administration, government administration. Yeah. So half of it is kind of wasted before it ever gets to who it's supposed to help.
Okay. So in this new healthcare plan, phase one's budget, two is cutting regs, and three is the creative idea part. So just real quick, still in phase one with the budget. One of the things that says that this is going to, we're going to reduce our deficit because of outlays for Medicaid. What changes will this do to Medicaid?
It's going to pull back a lot of the Medicaid expansion. So there's a whole bunch of, a lot of new people insured under Obamacare. In fact, almost all the new people insured under Obamacare were insured because of Medicaid expansion. And the federal government was responsible for paying at first 100% of the new Medicaid enrollees, and then it goes down to, I think by 2020, 90%. So I think right now we're at 95% that the federal government pays. Remember, that's our tax dollars anyway, right? So it's our money anyway. So backing off on the Medicaid expansion and those premium subsidies that were being reimbursed by the federal government to the states, that's going to save a lot of money to the federal government. And then that will essentially be replaced in part by these refundable tax credits. So that's where that savings comes in. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Okay. Well, and why would people want Medicaid to get back to a normal coverage again, I would say, because so many people, they said, well, so many more people are allowed on Medicaid. But the problem is, even here in Colorado, is they expanded the poverty level so that if you were up to 138% of the poverty level, you were forced into Medicaid. If you were working through the state exchange, you didn't have an opportunity to do anything else. And if you're on Medicaid, you're standing in line at the doctor's office to get in because doctors don't want to see you, but they can't afford to see you because they don't get reimbursed as quickly or as much.
Costs us money. It's not just that we don't get paid. It actually costs us money to see Medicaid patients. But and also in Colorado, we have something like 1.3 or 1.4 million people on Medicaid. Mm-hmm. Ouch. I mean, that's almost
really?
One out of every five Coloradoans is on Medicaid. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And that goes up to something like $80,000 of income for a family of four, and you can qualify for premium subsidies. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, and
there's
the problem,
no reason
too,
that
is there
somebody making that much money couldn't pay for health care as long as we could adjust, if we could address the actual issue of why premiums are so high because of state mandates and Obamacare coverage mandates, that made premiums cost so high that nobody could actually afford to pay the premium and certainly couldn't afford the deductible as well, like Jimmy was talking about earlier. So if we could actually bring that cost way down, people making $75,000, there's no reason they couldn't have great insurance for their family.
Well, and actually be able to be seen, because there's a difference between having the insurance or the coverage and actually being able to get the care.
Right. Medicaid is the worst possible health care coverage you could have.
Okay. So phase two is going to be regs. Talk to us about phase two. And what does it have to go through before we get to phase two? What's left?
Phase two, they're probably doing that concurrently, I would imagine. So in Obamacare, Obamacare created some 1,400, I mean, it was just over 1,000 new authorities and powers that they granted to the Secretary of Health and Human Services. It's kind of like if they couldn't figure out who was supposed to handle this, they just gave it to the Secretary of HHS. So all these new powers. Well, now we have Congressman Dr. Tom Price is now the Secretary of HHS. He can use those provisions in Obamacare to actually help take it apart or to take away a whole lot of government spending, a lot of government agencies and panels and so forth, and a lot of the rules and regulation. He can get rid of those himself without any further legislation. So there's really not much. He has the authority to do that under Obamacare. So Obamacare abused its right, abused its power, and now it's kind of coming back to dismantle it, which I think is great.
So we're talking to Dr. Jill Vecchio about the new healthcare replacement. So if everybody's saying we should have repealed the entire Obamacare first, but what I hear you saying, Jill, is that by not repealing the entire thing first and going through these three phases, it's allowing Congress to use Obamacare's rules against itself to tear itself down and pull out all these extra crazy regulations.
Right, without legislation. So in a way, and I've not heard them say it that way, because otherwise, if you think about it, if they had repealed Obamacare, those things would go away technically also, but it could be more difficult to
To pass something, because you might have the filibuster thing that you'd have to get past. So I think that it's very creative that they're backing this out, kind of how it was put in.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then part three is where it gets fun. Part three is where we can be creative, and hopefully congressmen will be creative. There's some wonderful ideas out there, and I encourage people to go online, look up Rand Paul, look up Tom Price, Paul Ryan. There are a bunch of ideas out there that are really great and interesting.
Mm-hmm. Stick with us. It's the Emerichicks, Molly and Kim, talking to Dr. Jill Vecchio about the healthcare law. Water's Edge Winery is a craft winery located in the heart of Centennial. Locally owned, Chad and Jennifer are currently making more than 30 international varietals with very low sulfites with you in mind. Drop in any time to watch the winemaker at work or experience a wine tasting. Sample some of their delicious meats and cheeses or chocolates. So grab your girlfriends, bring your book club, celebrate any occasion in their tasting room. Water's Edge Winery is located across from the streets at South Glen and Centennial. Call them today, 720-381-6663. Website is wewdenver.com, and we'll see you at the Water's Edge Winery, your new happy place.
Home is where the heart is. It's that safe place where memories are made, meals shared, and holidays celebrated. When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you need to work with RE/MAX award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine has helped individuals navigate the ups and downs of the Denver real estate market for over 28 years. Karen is honest, trustworthy, and has your best interests in mind. Karen takes the time to understand your unique wants and needs and can help you make the best decision for you and your family. Give Karen Levine a call at 303-877-7516 for a no-cost consultation, or visit her online at KarenLevine@remax.net, and tell her the Emerichicks sent you.
Hey, welcome back to the Emerichicks with Molly and Kim on KDMT 1690 AM. We are talking with Dr. Jill Vecchio, who, as you know, read the entire Obamacare bill and for many years has been talking to Congress about solutions to get rid of this thing and what would be better for people. She cares a lot about the patient-client relationship and allowing us to have choice and allowing us to have, you know,
what great ideas, Molly.
Less expensive services and things like that. Love it. Yeah, she's done a great job here. And so interesting that she has actually sat down with Congress previously and is still talking to them today about the solutions. So before we went to break, we were talking, there were three phases of this new health care law. They chose not to just repeal the entire thing first for a reason and it's going to come out. It's going to be better for everybody because of it. So we just went through. The first phase is budget. They're reducing the budget. They're reducing a deficit by $337 billion over 10 years, which is what CBO just came out with. So hopefully that's true. Number two, they're going to cut regulations because Obamacare put into place over 1,000 regulations, powers, put so much extra power with the Secretary of Health and Human Services and put together a bunch of different rules and regs and agencies and things like that that we're going to cut and get rid of. But they didn't cut yet because of the overreach allowed under Obamacare. Now, Tom Price, Secretary of HHS, is going to be allowed to use that power in order to cut without having to go through Congress first. That's awesome.
Yeah, I think that's kind of brilliant.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Nobody thought about that. All right. Phase three is creative ideas. So when we get to that phase of this healthcare law, Jill, they're listening to you. What are you saying we should do? What should we put into this new plan now?
Like I said, for years, different plans have been coming up over the years. So from 2009, there was a plan. And every few years or every year, there's been a new plan, or they've, you know, kind of tweaked the plan from the year before and brought out another one. Now, the three of us were in Washington that time. We met with congressmen about a plan at that time that was H.R. 3121. And then I, you know, gave them some other ideas. And then the following year, it was H.R. 2300 with Tom Price. But it's really kind of the same legislation that was just being tweaked. Senator Rand Paul has other great ideas, and you can find these really easily online. And the media could have found them really easily online as well, but they chose to adopt the narrative that the Republicans do not have a plan for replacement, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
That's all we've heard. And believe me, you and Kim and I know firsthand that there have always been plans out there. So some of the things that they're going to be talking about, and all this is going to be negotiated. This is all up for grabs. But we now have a president that is a master negotiator.
The art of the deal. I'm glad.
So now some of the things that we're throwing out there, expanding the use of health savings accounts. And we talked about Rand Paul mm-hmm. thinks that they should be unlimited. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, that's probably not going to pass through Congress because they love to have control over things.
Mm-hmm. They want the money.
So they'll probably increase the amount we can save every year. You don't have to spend it every year, but you could accumulate a great deal of money if you don't use it. But anyway, they're talking about having expanding health savings accounts so that it at least covers. And I think this is in part one, the budget part, so that you can save enough tax free to at least cover your deductible and any out of pocket costs that are expected under whatever insurance plan you've got.
So it's kind of like a flexible spending account. So you plan it at the beginning of the year, earlier. You know, you're going to have eyeglasses or LASIK surgery or, you know, knee surgery.
Yeah, it's not the same as an FSA, but it's the same concept.
But it seems like the same concept. If you know in advance, you could put how much away that you want.
You'll know how much you can put away based on the insurance
plan. And it's not a use it or lose it. You keep it. Good.
Right.
Like you can now.
And then they talk about selling insurance across state lines, which I think we're going to cover. We still will have time to cover because I don't think I really think we need to look hard at that to see if really that's number one necessary. Number two, is it in our best interest?
Okay.
Then they're also going to talk about tort reform to decrease the cost of defensive medicine.
Nice.
Which is really important, but it would also, the idea is to also definitely absolutely maintain the integrity of reimbursing people who truly are the victims of negligence, mm-hmm. right? So we want to make sure they're taken care of. Block granting Medicaid to the states. In general, Congress is talking about returning a lot of the power over health care back to the states and the people, which is where it belongs, according to the Constitution.
Yep.
The Ninth and Tenth Amendment are very specific. Government does not have control. They don't have the authority to control health care at all. So let's get it back to the states and to the people individually. And that, when I say that, I also want people to think about things that we could do as individuals that don't have to be legislated in order to encourage a free market response to whatever it is we want for our health care. For instance, ask every time you go to the dentist or the doctor or the pharmacy or the hospital, what would it be if I paid cash? It doesn't mean you're going to pay cash, but ask the question.
Yeah.
The more we ask the question, the more providers are going to be pressured and are going to realize that in order to be responsive to their patients, and to the marketplace, they're going to have to post their prices.
Yeah, be transparent.
Right.
To be competitive.
They're also talking about expanding risk pools so that you may have national risk pools. You may have state risk pools. You could have associations like, let's say, if a guy has an auto parts store, let's say all of the auto parts stores in Colorado or something could form an association and they could self-insure. Or they could share risk at least. So let's say a person, and another thing they're talking about is that you would get to own your insurance policy. And it may perhaps go with you, follow you, rather than staying with the employer.
Portable.
So we really do need to separate it from the workplace, because that takes, having insurance tied to the workplace is a huge reason why pre-existing conditions is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had your insurance policy and it stayed with you and you kept your coverage, kept up with some kind of insurance coverage, then you wouldn't, they could pass legislation that would say, even though you change insurance companies because you've had continuous coverage, the new insurance company couldn't charge for pre-existing conditions.
And so then when you leave your employer and you're on your own or in between jobs, then you can probably adjust the amount of money that you want, the coverage that you want, based on what, you know, if you're making enough money to cover everything or not, but at least you have continuous coverage.
Right.
And then your employer wants to incentivize and attract and retain quality employees. They can give you a certain amount of money more to help you pay for what you have.
Right. Now, maybe I should back up a little bit, because I've talked about this so much that I automatically think that other people remember it. But what we have now is prepaid health care. We don't need health insurance to pay for every single thing. Our car insurance doesn't pay for oil changes and new tires. What we should have is catastrophic health insurance, and that's also going to be emphasized in this law. There's going to be a lot more flexibility in what kind of insurance coverage people can have. That being said, that's not typically, until Obamacare, that has always been a state issue. The states, the individual states, made lists of insurance mandates, coverages that every insurance policy sold in their state had to have. So as a state, we here in Colorado would need to address that list of mandates. And it's going to be in our best interest. If we want to decrease premium costs, we need to get rid of, I shouldn't have to pay for maternity care, pediatric vision and dental, infertility treatments, that sort of thing. I shouldn't have to pay for that because I'll never use it. And, we should only have to pay for things that are truly catastrophic, catastrophic illness or injury. That's what we should have to pay for insurance, because that's true insurance.
Boy, Jill, this is quite the list here. We're talking with Dr. Jill Vecchio regarding the new healthcare here in Colorado, or here in America. I was thinking about Colorado, though, because you and I had chatted a little bit about state lines. And mentioning this, I think that it's a good idea to be able to compete across state lines. And as you were talking about this, I realized that, sometimes down at the state house, I think they do some pretty wacky things here in Colorado. And so I kind of would hate to have them make this decision about what healthcare was like exactly in Colorado. I'd rather, have some competition from other states coming in, because sometimes I don't trust what's going on down there at the Capitol.
Right, right.
So what would you say to that?
In some respects, again, I think that there are a lot of things we could do to promote flexibility as consumers that wouldn't necessarily need legislation, that maybe we could work around some of that. The other thing is, let's get new people in power. If the people in Colorado aren't happy with legislation that's passed, or they think that the consumer-driven reforms that they want will not be passed by their current legislators or their governor or whatever, that means you need to get somebody else in office.
Well, there's that contingent, though, that's trying to put forth the universal health care here in Colorado. I mean,
right.
Yeah, sometimes I think that we're kind of the petri dish of all these real radical ideas here.
Definitely, we definitely are.
So,
because of the system we have for putting forth legislation.
Initiative.
Yes,
process?
The initiative process. Okay. Right. Now, one of the other things that I wanted to bring up, is it okay to bring it up now?
Tell us what it is, and then we're going to go to break, and we'll come back and actually tell the meat.
Okay, so we're going to talk about purchasing insurance across state lines, because I believe that this could potentially give the federal government way too much power over our health care.
Right. Okay, so Dr. Jill Vecchio talking with the Americhicks, Molly and Kim on KDMT about the new solution to health care. Stick with us. We will be right back.
Every business needs great branding, an effective website, professional photography, and videos to promote their products and services. Normally, businesses have to find numerous providers to handle all this work while incurring substantial costs. That's where Desi On Demand comes in. You choose your budget, and you choose your services from Desi On Demand's menu. Kim Munson here. Molly and I heartily endorse the creativity, innovation, dedication, and integrity that Brand and the founder of Desi and his team bring to the table. Check out Desi On Demand's website at mydesi.com, that's D-E-Z-I, or call 303-359-1255 and tell them the AmeriChick sent you.
It's complicated. Life, sometimes. Bookkeeping, sometimes. Taxes, all the stinking time. That's why you need to work with the proven professionals at Predefitch & Company. They offer exceptional services to individuals, businesses, and nonprofits. Serving the South Metro area, the team at Predefitch & Company takes a proactive approach in understanding your tax, accounting, and bookkeeping needs. Tax day's right around the corner, so call the pros at Predefitch & Company today. 303-791-3000 or check out the website at dpredefitch.com. And be sure to tell them the AmeriChick sent you. I got this
feeling. Hey, welcome back. We are the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim. We're talking healthcare today with Dr. Jill Vecchio. The conversation has been really informative. But when we went to break, we were talking about selling insurance across state lines. And what do you think about that?
Well, I mean, the intent is good because selling it across state lines would make things more competitive. And, different states have different rules. The problem is different states have different rules. The problem is that I see that nobody's talking about is the Commerce Clause. The Commerce Clause is in Article 1 of the Constitution. And it says that the federal government has the authority to regulate commerce across states. And it was made be so that different states, you know, we were forming a country. So it was put in the Constitution because in order to have a unified country and to solidify our and establish ourselves as a unified country, we wanted to have free exchange of goods and services across the states and throughout the states to make it a more unified entity. So anyway, so the federal government could regulate commerce between the states. In 1945, there's a certain case, I'm not going to go into the details of it, but in 1945, an act was passed called the McCarran-Ferguson Act, and I've heard it several times now on some of the news shows, and they're saying we need to repeal McCarran-Ferguson to allow insurance to be sold across state lines. McCarran-Ferguson didn't prevent insurance from being sold across state lines specifically, but what it did was reinforce the notion that was in the 10th Amendment, where healthcare insurance was under the authority of the states, not the federal government. So the states had the authority to say what kind of insurance and they could have in the state and how it would be administered and so forth. That McCarran-Ferguson Act has prevented the federal government from imposing itself on healthcare in the states to a large extent until Obamacare. Really kind of blew McCarran-Ferguson apart to begin with. And there are provisions in there that allow for the federal government to overstep, you know, to have some over authority on the states. But if we started selling insurance openly across state lines, then health insurance would obviously fall under the Commerce Clause. That means that the federal government would have authority over health insurance for the entire country.
Oh, gosh, that's so interesting, because I was thinking, because sometimes I'm very concerned about what's going on at the State House down here in Denver, here in Colorado. And so I'm thinking, oh, that'd be a great idea that we wouldn't, you know, if they're off their rockers down here, at least we've got some other choices. But to your point, if somehow the federal government gets into a point where there's a lot of overreach, you know.
Have we ever had that?
I can't imagine when that happened. Yeah. Then
there's nothing the states or the people can do.
Yeah, so it goes directly against the 10th Amendment.
Right, and you can imagine that there would be plenty of Congress people that aren't going to want to
give up the power.
Give up that power. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we won't need the reason we wanted to go across state lines is because we wanted more options, more opportunities.
Right.
We wanted that competition to get a cheaper price. But if this new healthcare law does what it says it's going to do and what you've been talking to them about doing and getting rid of all these extra crazy regulations and things like that, the prices will come down. All of the insurance companies that kind of got out of the market will come back or just will have another opportunity to work directly with our doctors, right?
Well, I mean, and yeah, let's the
we
state
won't need it.
We're better off having the states have their own experiments in free market healthcare and to lower the prices of their insurance. Let the states work on, be responsible for creating an environment mm-hmm. that will please mm-hmm. both consumers, providers, and insurers. Mm-hmm. And if you create that kind of environment, the insurers will come to your state.
Right.
You know, they'll come here. But if you mess it up on a national level, you're never going to change it.
Well, I'm just thinking about California. I mean, the State House makes so many decisions that ultimately right. I think is really bad for California. And we're making some of those same mistakes here. But then there's always that option that you could move to another state.
Or, you know, what's more important, and what because I don't want to move from Colorado, let's just elect some people into office next time that will create an environment that is consumer and patient friendly, but still takes care of providers, and that will be a nice marketplace for the insurers.
Mm-hmm. So one last question. We have Dory who asked a question on Facebook. She was asking, Dr. Giovecchio, what is the big difference between Donald Trump's plan and Obamacare's plan?
Oh, my gosh. That's Obamacare's 2,700 pages of overstepping rules and regulations in the federal government telling us everything. The biggest thing that will make healthcare more affordable is flexibility in insurance policies.
And
getting the federal government out of our hair so that we can have more power at the state level and therefore at the people level.
Mm-hmm.
So Obamacare is a one size fits all. And I would say Trump has the potential for being custom fit.
Okay.
How about that? One size fits all versus a custom fit.
And you said Obamacare was 2,700 pages, plus there's all the rules and regs. How many pages in?
Well, so far it's 126, but that's just part one.
That's part one. Okay.
Right. So we haven't.
You have to be fair.
Part two may not have any legislation in it because that's using the powers already given to the Secretary of HHS. So there may or may not be any legislation in the part two.
Got it.
Part three will be the fun legislation of increasing the HSA's risk pools and, you know, how more information about turning Medicaid block grants, turning money over to the states mm-hmm. to let them manage their Medicaid populations and that sort of thing.
So, Jill, when giving the more control back to the states, you know, every time money goes through an entity at the federal government, every entity has to take their cut. And I know from my experience on city council that with many of those programs, they could take up to 20% for administration. Just think how much
at least. And think about how many people, if we could get more bang for our healthcare dollar, which I think we would, if number one, blocking Medicaid to the states is one way to do it too, get rid of as much government administration as possible. We waste so much of our hard-earned money. This is our money.
Mm-hmm.
And if it gets sent to the federal government first and then back to the states, that's just another level of middleman that's taking a chunk of the cash before it ever gets to helping anybody.
Ultimately, keeping it ourselves would be a good thing. Which I mean,
absolutely. And if we could,
they're trying to get to that.
If we could get there, then we would have control, and 100% or you know probably 95%. Of the money could then go directly to helping somebody get health care.
Awesome. So, Dr. Giovecchio, thanks for your time today. If anybody wants to get more information on what you're doing and the future solutions you're recommending, where can they go?
They can go to Healthcare Options That Work. Our website is still kind of under construction a little bit because we changed it around a little bit. So bear with me. Or you can contact Kim or Molly, and they'll know how to reach me if you have any trouble reaching me through our website.
Great. Awesome.
Healthcare Options That Work.
Healthcare Options That Work. Thanks, Dr. Giovecchio. We sure appreciate you.
Thank you.
And so let's bring Bruce on. Bruce Larson is a good friend of mine and Kim's, and he's with the America's Retirement Store. And something cool is going to happen tomorrow night. We are going to be joining him because, as you know, the economy looks like it might be improving a little bit. And anybody sleeping on their cash under their mattress, maybe time to pull that out. So, Bruce, tell us about the great event tomorrow night. Who should be joining us and what are we talking about?
Well, just anybody that wants to re-examine their investment portfolio based on the direction that economic policy is heading. You know, both the Trump administration and the Republican-led Congress is moving towards some pretty major tax changes. Now, none of that's gone into committee yet, but they're both on the same page on where they want to take it, and that could have pretty big impacts on the types of investments that make the most sense going forward.
Well, great. And so we'll really address these things tomorrow night, Bruce, so that people can have a better understanding of that and then make their decisions from there, right?
Yeah, it's kind of a three-part, I guess. Not really a presentation, more of a discussion with the people that come there. You know, we'll lean on you and Kim to basically, you know, talk about where policy's heading, what maybe the timing is of it. Nobody knows that for sure. But then we'll also have John Dundon there, a real good tax guy, to talk about where they're trying to move the tax policy. And then we'll boil that down to how does that change your investment outlook.
And how can people make a reservation on that, Bruce?
They can call Natalie. She's gone for the day, but between 7 and 4, call Natalie at 303-694-1600. Or we also have a sign-up page. I'm just using my book's webpage, arstaxbook.com. There you can register, and we'll know how many people to expect.
Perfect. And if you go on our website, your rolling banner ad is on there. People can just click on that, and that will take that directly to the registration page as well.
Yeah. Also, on our Americhix Facebook and Americhix Twitter, we also have this invite out because we're going to be there. We'd love everybody to join us at 7 p.m. tomorrow, which is March 14th. The address is 5445 DTC Boulevard in Greenwood Village.
DTC Parkway
in Greenwood Village. Awesome. And so we're looking forward to seeing you there, Bruce.
It should be a great event. So come out. We'd love
fun.
To see you.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Bruce. We'll see you there.
Okay.
Again, that's the America's Retirement Store. Yeah, there's a lot of different things going on in the marketplace today. And if Donald Trump really is able to push forward some of the promises that he made for that first 100 days, we're going to have some place to invest our money. No longer going to feel like the princess sleeping on the pea with that cash in my mattress, Kimmy. Time to pull it out and invest some money.
I guess it's time, Molly.
Get back to work. Yeah. It's been a long, hard, negative 8 years. You know, you're on KDMT 1690 AM Denver's Money Talk. And it's time to figure out what to do with your money. So come on out and join us. Yeah. Kim and I will be there live and in person. We'd love to meet you all face to face.
I think it'll be a great evening tomorrow evening. And then tomorrow on the show, we're going to talk about sanctuary cities and sanctuary states. I mean, it's kind of unbelievable to me, but there's legislation that's been proposed about making Colorado a sanctuary state.
Right.
So we're going to talk about that tomorrow.
And if you didn't know already, three of our cities are sanctuary cities.
Yep, Boulder, Aurora, and Denver. Now, they may not say that they are officially now, since President Trump said that if you are a sanctuary city, you're not going to get federal money. And Denver gets $175 million. So all of a sudden, Mayor Hancock says, we're not a sanctuary city, at least not officially. Mm-hmm. I guess he said we're not officially a sanctuary
city. But we're not going to turn in any illegal immigrants that are here that have committed any crimes. Mm-hmm.
So don't listen to what I say. Just watch what I do.
Right, right. Yeah. You're going to believe your own eyes, your own ears. You're going to believe what I tell you.
I know.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about that tomorrow and get into detail. So let's rewrite the narrative.
Definitely. Now, for our quote for today, James Madison. This goes back to really what Jill was saying. He says, "I cannot undertake to lay my finger on that article of the Constitution which granted a right to Congress of expending on objects of benevolence the money of their constituents." Huh. What do you think of that, Molly?
I think it sounds good. This is the Americhix Molly and Kim on KDMT 1690 AM signing off. We will talk to you all tomorrow, same time, same place, 5 to 6 p.m., Monday to Friday, always. Check us out on Facebook and Twitter as well. Have a good night.